Every year, it happens like clockwork.
Well,
Right after Thanksgiving,
yeah.
you see the global charts just flip. For about 4 weeks, one single, very specific genre completely takes over the music
It's a
industry.
total domination.
We are talking, of course, about Christmas music. But if you like strip away the tinsel and everything, what is the actual secret? What makes a song sound instantly, undeniably Christmassy?
Right.
Is it just the obvious stuff, sleigh bells, maybe a waltz tempo, or is there something deeper going on?
Well, it's that depth that's so fascinating. And you can't ignore the scale of it. I mean, the money is just staggering. Billboard estimates Christmas recordings earn something like $177 million a year in the US alone.
Wow.
But you hit the nail on the head. The real value isn't just the money, it's creating those evergreen hits. The Mariah Careys, Michael Bublés, Brenda Lee, those songs become like cultural fixtures that create this bond with memories for
It's the
generations.
ultimate paradox, isn't it? A genre dictates the entire global music scene for a month, and then poof, December 26th, it's gone.
Vanishes.
So our mission today is to use the insights of a master songwriter, Charlie Puth, who's really studied this. We want to identify the precise musical keys to that sound and figure out how this whole genre fits into, streaming, AI, and modern songwriting.
Okay, let's start with the foundations. Because for Puth, his journey into cracking this code really started with contrast.
Right.
He talked about his early music experience in a Roman Catholic church, and he described the sound as stiff, very rhythmically rigid. He realized pretty quickly that to make a song sound truly Christmassy, it needed warmth, it needed movement.
And that's what led him to what he called the juiced up gospel style, right? The kind of stuff you'd find in, say, Memphis. He wasn't just talking about making it louder, he meant giving it a groove.
Exactly, a groove. And that search led him right to R&B Christmas music. Think Luther Vandross, often produced by the great Quincy Jones. Puth realized how important those subtle chord changes are, the rhythmic swing of R&B. That's what gives it that loose, romantic holiday feel. It's miles away from the strict hymns he grew up with.
Okay, so that leads us into the technical stuff. Let's start with the one everyone can hear, the sleigh bells.
The most obvious one, yeah.
Puth. Puth said they're essential. Producers even call them the perks.
They're the instant signifier. He told this great story about the TLC track at the end of Home Alone 2. That's a 90s R&B song, through and through.
Right.
But the producer, Dallas Austin, he just layered sleigh bells over the percussion, and instantly it becomes a Christmas hit. It's like the cheapest, most effective way to brand a song for the season.
But the real magic, the thing that kind of tricks our brains,
Yeah.
is harmonic.
Yeah.
Puth demonstrated this one chord progression. We'll call it the Christmas chord. He admits he can't name the technical jargon, but he knows it by feel, and he knows it resolves so cleanly.
And what he's describing there is a thing called non-diatonic harmony. Basically, it's using chords that don't technically belong in the song's main key. So instead of moving predictably, the music takes this quick, unexpected detour to a more exotic chord, maybe a minor chord. It creates this brief bit of tension, and then it resolves perfectly back home. That pull and release is like a deep, satisfying sigh in musical form.
And that's what triggers the nostalgia.
It's that safe, sentimental feeling.
Yeah.
Exactly. So when he points out that this exact progression is in the verse of Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You,
Yeah.
you realize that song is a masterpiece, not just for the vocals. It's engineered to make you feel that.
Wow. And speaking of Mariah, Puth also mentioned that Christmas melodies use a lot of chromaticism.
Yeah, if you listen to that opening melody of All I Want for Christmas Is You, it uses notes that are half steps apart. It's like a sliding motion. That little slide gives it this slightly mournful, longing feeling. It keeps it from sounding like a simple nursery rhyme.
And we also see this with the key changes, right? They're super common in traditional or worship music because they dramatically push the emotion forward. They take you on a little journey.
And that journey brings us right to the nostalgia paradox. Puth said Christmas music is the only genre where people like universally reach for the really old stuff, especially that 60s sound. Why aren't we all demanding brand new sounds in December?
Because the goal is comfort, memory. Puth even said that Kelly Clarkson's huge hit from 2011, Underneath the Tree, is basically rocking around the Christmas tree if you just took away the modern production.
It is. It's an intentional throwback. And that sonic memory even stretches to the 80s. Puth's own holiday song, December 25th, he knew it needed that 80s pop feel. He even used a specific piece of gear, the Lin snare drum.
Oh, that big clap-like snare sound.
Yes, if you're not familiar with it, it was the super famous drum machine in the 80s.
Like in Wham's Last Christmas.
Exactly like that. Puth calls using it an elbow rub to the 80s. It just shows that even modern writers know they have to deliberately inject the sounds of the past, the 60s swing, the 80s synths, to get into the Christmas canon today.
That's a great transition into the different emotional subgenres. He identified some really interesting niches, starting with the severely underappreciated R&B Christmas.
So underappreciated.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Why isn't this subgenre more dominant? It has all that warmth and complexity. You brought up Boys to the Men's Let It Snow and was like, why isn't this a global number one hit every year?
It's a good question. That R&B sound often leans into jazzier chords, slower tempos. You know, it might not have the same broad reach as the big up-tempo pop hits. Puth pointed to the 2000 Grinch soundtrack with Justin Timberlake. He felt that was a perfect example of modern R&B Christmas that should be way bigger.
And his favorite moment from the genre, the outro of that Boys to Men song.
Oh, yeah.
He described it as sounding like falling in love at Christmas. Like you're sneaking away into a cozy room at a house party. It's such a specific, intimate feeling tied to the music.
And that intimacy is a world away from the second subgenre he identified, the depressingly sad country Christmas.
I mean, you can't ignore the mood shift once you cross the Mason-Dixon line musically. Puth noted that country Christmas can be aggressively sad.
He gave two really powerful examples. The first is The Christmas Shoes. It's a story about a poor kid trying to buy shoes for his dying mom to wear when she meets Jesus. The emotional stakes are just so high.
And then there's Willie Nelson's Pretty Paper, about a homeless person selling paper on the street during the holiday rush. It just forces you to confront this profound loneliness at a time that's supposed to be about warmth.
And what's wild is that these extremes, the jazzy R&B and the gut-wrenching country, they both use the same basic harmonic tricks we talked about. But the context just changes everything.
But no matter the mood, its dominance on the charts today is a massive phenomenon of the streaming era.
That really needs to be emphasized. Christmas music was not topping the Hot 100 in 2010 like it does now. What changed was access and curation.
Okay, so explain that. How did streaming just accelerate this whole thing?
Well, before streaming, you were limited. You'd buy maybe one Nat King Cole album, a compilation CD. Now, you can just tell your smart speaker to play endless themed playlists. Puth pointed out that holiday music actually over-indexes on services like Amazon Music.
Right.
And the platforms push those playlists hard to drive engagement, which reinforces the cycle, pushing the classics even higher. It's a feedback loop that maximizes that $177 million window.
An efficiency engine for nostalgia. But there's a downside, right? That instant disappearance. December 26th, the playlists are gone, and the industry just moves on.
Which brings us to the songwriter's craft in this new world. Get this. Puth wrote his own holiday song December 25th in about an hour, over the phone.
Which completely blows up the idea of the old school calculated July writing sessions that labels used to demand.
Totally. But even with that speed, he was very deliberate about the song structure. He noted that a lot of modern Christmas music avoids a complicated middle section, but he's a huge advocate for bringing back the bridge.
The bridge is so important. It's where the key often shifts, right?
Yeah.
It's the climax before the final chorus.
Exactly. Puth finds that shift essential for a satisfying song. And that preference really ties into a bigger industry shift he described, moving away from the pitch game.
So for listeners who don't know, what was the pitch game?
So the pitch game was the dominant model, say, up until the mid-2010s. A writer would make a demo without a specific artist in mind and then pitch it to dozens of different labels, hoping a big star would cut it. Puth said he wrote See You Again around 2014, and 10 different artists recorded a version before he ended up singing it himself.
Wow, it was like a factory assembly line?
For sure. But now Puth says the swag is different. Artists today, like Sabrina Carpenter, are focused on crafting an entire body of work with a small core team. It's about artistic integrity, not just shopping for a hit.
And you see that in how people listen now, too. People are buying vinyl again, they care about the album art.
The whole package. The listener cares about the artist's craft, not just the single. And that requires an honesty that Puth is really chasing now.
Which is exactly what he's targeting with his new non-Christmas album, Whatever's Clever.
Mm-hmm.
He said he wants to focus on brutal honesty, singing about his insecurities, about friendships changing, things that are tough to talk about.
And that focus on imperfection, on vulnerability. That's his defense against AI. He finds AI music generators like Suno detrimental, not because they make music, but because they remove the fun of human exploration.
The messiness of it.
The messiness, yeah. He argues an engine can't replicate the specific human feeling you get from a song like The Christmas Shoes. Until AI can make you feel something that profound, the flawed, honest human element is always going to win, especially in a genre built entirely on feeling.
Which brings us to the Christmas canon itself. Puth talked about songs that accidentally become Christmas hits. The die-hard principle, as we could call it.
I love that. They're not about Christmas, but their setting just pulls them in.
The classic examples are Joni Mitchell's River, which James Taylor covered.
And Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah. I mean, Cohen is definitely not singing about Santa Claus, but because it gets played so much around that time of year, it's just been adopted.
Right. And maybe the best example is Dan Fogelberg's Same Old Lang Syne.
It's so sad.
It's about running into an old flame on Christmas Eve and realizing nothing's changed.
It's depressing. But because it's so specific to that date, it has this canonical power.
Okay, so on the flip side, what about the exclusions? Songs Puth thinks should be, you know, retired.
The first one's pretty straightforward. Baby, it's cold outside. He just said he doesn't even really like the melody.
Fair enough.
But the second one is way more provocative. My favorite things from The Sound of Music.
Oh, that's a hot take. It's played everywhere.
It is, but he argues that while it mentions packages tied up with string, it's really a song about Austria. It just doesn't generate that specific shared Christmas feeling. It's about winter comfort, maybe, but not the holiday itself.
That's a strong argument.
Yeah.
So to wrap up, he shared a few of his all-time favorites. He gave a huge shout out to Justin Bieber's Christmas album, especially the song Mistletoe.
And the Carpenters' Merry Christmas, Darling. Classic.
He also loves the novelty songs, though. He called the lyrics to All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front Teeth. Absolute genius.
Well, think about it. The detail is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
The singer literally can't pronounce Merry Christmas properly without her two front teeth. That's the kind of specific human detail that makes a song stick.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? We've unpacked the technical stuff, that R&B swing, the crucial Christmas chord, the chromaticism that anchors us in nostalgia, whether the song is super jolly or incredibly sad.
Yeah, and this deep dive really shows the tension between the calculated $177 million business, which thrives on algorithms, and the deeply human, honest craft that artists like Puth are pursuing. That chase for brutal honesty feels necessary now, in an age where AI can generate perfection in a second.
Right.
The power of this music rests in its connection to our flawed, complex human emotions.
So we've learned the secret isn't just sleigh bells. It's in the harmony, in those moments of tension and release. So next time you hear a holiday hit, or even a pop song in July, listen closely. Are the musical elements really about Christmas? Or are they just those key changes in chords, that specific harmonic journey, tricking your brain into feeling nostalgic, something to mull over until the decorations come back out?